You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
A special VanCast for you. Dare I say, an emergency VanCast. Dresser, can you make it an alarm sound? You made all those sound effects in the bubble last summer. Can you do like an alarm sound effect?
Well, how about a siren? Like, woo, 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 woo.
There we go. Perfect.
There we go.
That's all we need.
There we go. A siren. A bomb siren. Take cover, Vancouver. Take cover.
Sound the alarms. A heavy, heavy news day. Here on the west coast of Canada.
You know what? Can we just stop and recognize, like, I was sitting down and I was thinking to myself, like, what a fucking day. Like, today is as crazy a day of Canucks news as you'll ever get in normal times.
Well.
Right? This season is like 15th on the list of crazy right. Canucks news days. But man, today was, one for the memory bank.
Yeah. And really, in a pretty condensed period of time, in and around an afternoon hockey game, the final time at Rogers Arena, we gathered, there was hockey played, it meant nothing, we won't talk about that, but really, there was the tweet from Alex Blair a couple hours before puck drop that change might be coming, and that got Twitter going at that point, and really, it's been nonstop since, so let's jump in, because really, the news of the day is that Jim Benning is going to remain the general manager of the Vancouver Canucks.
That is not a surprise to me, I think, ultimately. I wasn't sure which way the wind was blowing, but as today unfolded in the wake of, rampant speculation. Speculation that really ramped up with Alex Blair's tweet this morning, right? As the day unfolded, as I made calls, I became more and more convinced that all signs were pointing towards stability at the top of Canucks hockey operations. And Rick and I sort of put that together a little bit as we worked through the Sedin twins, which we'll get to. We'll have to reverse back because what could possibly be? That's not even the biggest story of the day. But it might be third behind Demko's rant, which we'll also get to. But the
how dare you put the Sedins on the back burner in Vancouver?
I know it's a sin, but it also must be done. The Twins thing, as I reported that out today, the sense I got was that they were going to be brought in to work with Jim Benning. Like, that was the sense I got, and the more I understood that, the more I figured for sure Benning's safe. And then getting confirmation that their expiring hockey ops staff in the scouting ranks, had been extended, that those deals were in progress, if not done already. Why are you returning a scouting staff put together by a GM who you're going to fire? Like, that doesn't make sense at all, right? And so where does that leave us? That leaves us with a team that needs to win tomorrow to avoid finishing seventh in the North, with a roster that is bad, with very limited room to improve next season, and, probably making zero changes ahead of, at some point, opening the doors to Rogers Arena again and inviting fans back. Fans who, in this marketplace, have been clamoring for change all season, right? Like, there was a time this offseason where I do think there was some positivity about this club's direction. I think that's been squandered throughout the course of this season. Massively, massively squandered. And so we're sort of in this moment where, you know, the public or the consumer confidence crisis that's embroiled this franchise and that worsened throughout this season as the news got grimmer and grimmer, right? From early season losses, cap management, on and on, right? Like all of those stories that we're sort of more used to, you know, to a COVID outbreak, to how that was dealt with, to communication with players and inter-team communication, to, you know, sexual misconduct allegations, to how the organization dealt with those sexual misconduct allegations, to the treatment of the coaching staff, to the treatment of the scouts, even if they were extended today. It's an ugly portrait. Like, it's an ugly portrait of an organization far off the rails. And so while I understand why fans would be disappointed by today's news and don't believe that Jim Benning's the guy who can take this team over the top, I also think that, frankly, for Canucks ownership to have fired Jim after a season in which they were uncommonly involved cooperatively with hockey operations on every move would have, like, I understand why they'd be like, you know what? This one's kind of on us. You deserve another kick at the can. I know that doesn't make it any easier for fans, but you can understand that there is a twisted logic. It's just, make no mistake, it is twisted, right? Like, it is a twisted logic. And it does speak to, you know, more than anything, what this organization needs is someone who's able to manage up, you know, in the face of this ownership group. And that's not something Jim Benning's done really at all. I think it's a major reason why he survived this. And, you know, now the club's going to have a lot of pressure and their manager's going to have a lot of pressure. And one wonders if they can avoid the temptation of making win now moves before their window really reopens. Considering, you know, the 2 years remaining on Jim's contract status would imply, right, that this is a win now season again for the general manager. Even if the team's not set up like that, and even if that doesn't match the timeline that he himself spelled out in February.
Right. So the management group's going to get another chance. They're going to live on, but we're still no closer to knowing if the coach is going to get that opportunity as well. And it doesn't feel like that's going to be the case. In fact, if Jim Benning now realizes, like, you're right, like, it's go time. Not that it hasn't been here the last little bit, but Tom, like, this just feels like it opens the door for Claude Julien to come in here. And, you know, they've hired inexperienced coaches the last couple of times. If you're a GM and your job is now hanging in the balance and you have run out of lifelines to play, like, don't you turn to a veteran guy that you know, that you trust, that has a Stanley Cup, that happens to have a Stanley Cup against your franchise, in fact, a decade ago? Like, if they're going to move on from Travis Green, it just kind of feels like that's the type of move that I would expect from Jim Benning.
Yep, makes a lot of sense. It's, you know, that's the old playbook. Like, I've seen it. I've worked that exact playbook in, what was it, 2018, when the Panthers, after nearly making the playoffs the year before, showing some serious signs of progress, you know, canned Bob Bugner and his coaching staff and brought in Q, right? And I mean, this does feel apart, like a similar-ish type move. You know, I also believe that the Canucks had interest in Claude when he last hit the market, which was right before they fired Willie DeJardin and right before they hired Travis Green. You know, I think there was some serious internal discussion about the possibility of bringing Julien in then. So yeah, Julian's gone to ground. Julien hasn't talked to anyone since he lost the Montreal job. You know, I am picking up what you are putting down in terms of, you know, a possible scenario. But in saying that, I do think it's worth noting, like, Julian's a good systems coach in that his teams don't surrender much. But I don't think his in-game adjustment and player communication, like, man management skills are close to the level of Travis Green's, frankly. Like, there's a lot of people you can talk to around this industry who will tell you that they think Travis is a better coach. The market probably won't reflect that in terms of what both guys get paid on their next deal. But, you know, I do think that that's certainly a minority opinion, but an extant opinion within the hockey ranks. And, you know, this will transition us into the Demko comments, because the way that the Canucks have treated this coaching staff, leaving them flapping in the wind here right until the last 24 hours of the season, you know, appalling, like truly appalling stuff from a bizarrely run organization.
Yeah, I mean, I've tried to sort of reconcile it in my head and figure out like why it's come to this. And I keep going back to the fact that, you know, they committed $25 million to Thatcher Demko when they didn't have to. Like, there was no urgency to get that deal done. Tanner Pearson's deal, the trade deadline, was a little bit of, a pressure point, right? Like, if they couldn't have come to terms, maybe they would have moved Pearson. Who knows? But that one was impacted by the trade deadline. The Demko deal didn't have to get done then. And I mean, I remember talking at that time, too, about, you know, priorities. And we all know, the hockey world knows, that you had Pettersson and Hughes. And I think the conventional thinking was you'd get those guys done. You'd see what you had left, what the landscape was, all of that. And then you would move on Demko. But they decided to commit to Demko. That deal doesn't kick in until next year. Like, any contract extension for Travis Green and his coaching staff wouldn't kick in until next year. So, you know, it's not about empty buildings and no concerts and all that kind of stuff right now. There were ways to structure the deal. I'm sure there were ways to structure a deal that, you know, Travis would have got a modest boost in the first year and it could have been back and loaded and those types of things. The minute that they started committing to players and the vault door was open and there was nothing, you know, just crickets when it came to any signs of any sort of further discussion or, you know, negotiations heating up. That to me was the indicator that, you know, like, we talk about money and people are like, well, maybe Travis is asking too much. Like, maybe he's just not their guy, right? Like, I've had trouble. We've talked about it at length, and I've had trouble sort of figuring out the motivation of this organization to just put this guy through the ringer. Think what you want about Travis Green as a coach, and there are lots of people out there. We see it all the time in the comment section. You know, why do you guys think he should be back? He's not a great coach. He hasn't done a great job. Think whatever you want. He's a human being who deserves to be treated like this. Just doesn't happen in hockey circles generally. And you're right. Like No,
it's appalling. It's beneath contempt. Right?
Yeah. No, you're right. Well said.
Like, it is. It's beneath contempt. But you know what? It's all part and parcel with the idiot fanboy's guide on how to run a beloved sports team into the ground, right? And if you see everything as just the next page in that fantastic manual and try to enjoy the read sardonically, that might be your best route toward understanding the way that this organization's functioning at this point.
So they commit $25 million bucks to Demko, and yet they're not willing to spend a couple hundred grand to keep the guy that has propped him up, worked with him, yeah, got him to become Bubble Demko, and then we saw Bubble Demko reemerge in March, and then after COVID, they've reinstalled him as the number one guy. They've played him a bunch down the stretch here, whether that's right or wrong, they've done that, and you heard it, and you don't hear it often from a player basically pouring out his heart after the game today about how much Ian Clark means to him and how hopefully the organization can figure things out here to keep Ian Clark on staff.
I desperately hope they can figure something out. That is the quote. Let that ring around. When was the last time you saw a player plead with their organization? After, by the way, they just signed a $25 million contract with that club to keep a coach that they like working with. Well, I mean, I've never seen it. You know? It's like, there's so much remarkable shit going on that it's easy to just sort of glaze over and be like, well, that's a story. No, this is wild. Remarkable. A plea to Canucks management and ownership to get Ian Clark done. And look, Demko seemed happy, pleased to be asked about it. His mother tweeted about it when Ian McIntyre, transcribed the entire quote and corrected his transcription because McIntyre's transcription had left out the word desperately. I suspect, especially with the way that Demko alluded to, like within the text of Demko's answer is, I don't like to talk about working with him in the media. But, right? That's not subtext, JPAT. That's not me reading something. That's text. That's there on the fucking page. And
yes,
like, I don't think Demko would have done that without at least sort of having, not probably not conferred with Clark, but at least, you know, hey, look, if I'm asked, I'm telling him. You know, like, but that just speaks to the level of dysfunction surrounding this club. Like, a player signs, commits, the organization commits to him. They won't commit a fraction of that investment to the guy who's got the most out of this goaltender. You know, Demko loves working with Clark, too. Like, I've said it before. I've been reporting it for a bit. Like, it's true, and you can tell now. Like, now there's no disputing it. Now you don't have to rely on me. It's evident. And to not protect your investment, I mean, that's, you know, that's rookie shit. That's the sort of management that will fail if you're running a fucking lemonade stand, much less a multi-million-dollar franchise, multi-hundred-million-dollar franchise in a efficiency contest league like the hard-capped NHL. Just, again, it's baffling. It's bizarre. It doesn't make sense. And it's, you know, trying to think your way through, it's almost the wrong way to go, right? It's like, think your way through it, then conclude the opposite. And you'll do better in terms of gauging the thinking of this organization at the moment.
Right. So that puts them, like, right back at...
I love this. I'm just, like, ending with these, like, such sour notes, and you're just like, yeah!
Well, I just...
It's so good.
No, but you're right, like... My head is still swimming, sort of, from just trying to process the day.
Processing.
And, like, there's so much going on right now. And so if Ian Clark goes, you're walking away from a guy that's regarded as top three in the NHL, probably, at his job and his position. And so you're going to have to, like, replace him. And now you're going to ask Thatcher Demko to work with a new guy. And I'm not suggesting that that's going to lead to a step back, but... You know, it's a, you're putting Demko on a different path when the path that he's been on.
Well, also let's just unpack it. Like, Sergei Bobrovsky had his best seasons under Ian Clark. Yeah. What's happened since? Jacob Markstrom had his best seasons under Ian Clark. What's happened since? Right? I mean,
yeah.
You know, not everybody. I mean, it's not across the line, right? Like, Luongo had his best seasons under Rolly Melanson after Ian Clark left Vancouver. So, I mean, I'm not saying it's, you know, fait accompli, but yeah, I mean, it's worth noting that the Canucks are taking on some risk here across the board. Again, you can't look at this team and tell me, any fan looking at this team and saying they're badly coached, goaltending, power play, penalty kill, 5-on-5, no matter what you're talking about. Like, you're wrong. Like, I don't know what else to tell you. Like, there's no one in this industry, no one who knows the sport that watches this team and goes, actually, the problem is coaching. Like, no one. No one in this business thinks that. And I don't know. That seems to be, if that's not what the Canucks themselves are concluding or arguing, or if that's not the story they're telling themselves, then at the very least, the end product in the event that the coaching staff walks and Benning remains is to act as if that's the conclusion. And that flies in the face of any reasonable, logical analysis of what went wrong for the Canucks this season.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right. This is the only real consequential question I'm going to ask you, but we were just talking about goaltending. I had somebody ask me, like, with Artur Seelovs as the backup to Thatcher Demko today and Braden Holtby getting a full day off, do you think there's any chance that Artur Seelovs plays the final game of the season?
No. No, I don't.
Neither do I. Because
unless Holtby's injured.
No, well, I think it would be a slap in the face to Mike DiPietro after all he went through
Oh, but I mean, what can you do now? Like, what can you do at this point? If say Holtby got hurt or something, like say there's some injury that they're just not ready to disclose, which, by the way, I don't believe to be the case. I think they gave Holtby the full day. He'll play tomorrow. I'm pretty sure that's how this is going to work. But
no, I think
what are you going to do? You sent him down. Like, it's not like you could bring him back. Isn't he in Latvia already? Like,
he is.
You know, what can you do?
No.
He's in Latvia. No. Silovs will soon be in Latvia. Is it a slap in the face to Silovs that DiPietro's got to Latvia before him? Like, come on. I mean, what are you going to do? The die was cast. DiPietro already got slapped in the face all season. Frankly, dating back to the summer. I mean, what else were they going
to
do?
No, there's nothing they can do. But it just, to me, optically, like, I'd feel for Mikey sat here, waited for his chance, doesn't ever come, and then they turn. Now, I'm with you, I know nothing about a Holtby injury. I just think they were given a veteran guy the day off, so he will be ready, because that's not a Travis Green play. If this is Travis Green's final game as Canucks head coach, like, I don't think he's turning to an unproven guy who's barely played pro hockey. I think he would turn to the veteran and Holtby, and we've talked about the way they've used Braden Holtby here since COVID. So I'm anticipating it will be Holtby. But anyways, I threw that one out there because I had somebody ask me, and I'm with you. I'm not anticipating that, but unless there is something we don't know about Braden Holtby, then maybe they go Silovs against Markstrom to finish up strong. All right.
Silvos! Yes. Silvos time!
I think they got his jersey right for warm-up today.
Yes.
All right, 22 minutes into this thing, let's get into the Sedins, because we really have...
Oh, and then can we stop at 33? Remember when everything was 33-22 and
yes.
Drove you nuts? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, so 11 minutes of tight Sedin talk. Let's go.
Yes. I think you, in the piece that you wrote, you know, you sort of referred to it as the Steve Yzerman approach, right? Like, if Daniel and Henrik are truly going to get on board, and at this point, we don't know. Like, the organization's reached out to
them. No. It's going to happen. You're right, we don't know, but I don't think it's not, this is an idle conversation. Like, hey, would you be, this has been going on a while, they're just figuring out exactly what it looks like. I mean, this is going
to
happen.
But you referred to it as the Yzerman Chris Drury sort of approach, right? Like,
yes, that seems to be what, so I don't know this, but here's my guess. And I want to be very clear that this is my guess, right?
Folks,
I bet
folks,
you,
this is Tom's guess.
This is my guess.
This is Tom's guess.
I bet you that the Twins were approached about something bigger. And instead we're like, we're not ready for that. Like, these are two men who have never had a bad day in their lives, right? Like, great attitudes, love fitness, love to compete with one another, have a really healthy view about the role of sports in their lives, right? Value their families. Bright, intelligent, hardworking. Like, these are the perfect human beings. You know what I mean? Like, you will not find individuals of a higher caliber than Henrik and Daniel Sedin in any walk of life ever. And I think they understand their limitations. I wonder very strongly if the Canucks approached them and were like, hey, how about co-presidents? Because that would just match the Canucks' MO, right? The Cortnell thing, the Linden thing, on and on. And I wonder if they were like, what about like a VP hockey ops role while we figure out, you know, what we're good at? And, you know, we're not going to take a job if we can't excel in it. These are smart guys. Like, they've seen how this organization functions from deep inside of it. They, you know Trevor well. They have a relationship there. They understand how that experience went. I think these are guys who are going to choose their shot and be very deliberate about exactly where their feet fall in terms of making their way back to professional hockey in a management capacity. I'm expecting, you know, directorships or VP titles. I'm expecting them to gradually enter this organization. And let me say this, you know, I blasted the idea of inexperienced alumni coming in to call the shots, that was the last thing this organization needed, right? The Twins in prescribed capacities, learning on the job in non-decision-making roles, like, no organization's ever going to get worse by employing people as smart, hardworking, and of that high a character as what Henrik and Daniel will bring to this organization on day one. And then where they go from there, I mean, that'll be up to them and up to their mentors. And, you know, I mean, that's sort of likely to be Jim and Weisbrod and probably assistant general manager Chris Gear and, you know, potentially player development director Ryan Johnson and on down the line. But there's going to be a lot of opportunity for them to learn, especially with Abbotsford coming to town next season.
And look, I've got all the time in the world for Daniel and Henrik, and if they can come in and help, great. But I am a little worried, I think. And again, they wouldn't take this lightly and they wouldn't come in blindly, but we have seen that the front office has sort of narrowed and has pushed people out. And you know, this front office hasn't necessarily been welcoming to outside voices. And so, you know, if these guys are going to take the job, I would think that they would want their voices to be heard. And I would like to think that the Canucks would put them in a position where their voices would be heard. Now, they've been away from the game for a couple of years. I'm sure they keep an eye on it. But in terms of being knee-deep in
player... Do you remember the piece I wrote with them?
Yeah.
And I'll never forget it, where they were like, did you see that Capitals-Coyotes game on Wednesday night? And I was just like... No. Like, what? So, I mean, this is not two guys who've been, I mean, look, they've enjoyed family life and playing tennis and hiking and running marathons and on, but like, these are Game Center Live junkies. Like, these guys have not been eyes closed to the evolution of the game, right? Like, these guys have been tracking the game obsessively. And, you know, that needs to be noted. They are different cats all around.
And that's great. Like, I think that people will want to hear that. Again, you know, where they are in terms of their knowledge of other teams' player personnel and, you know, advising on trades and those types of things, I'm imagining that there would be a lot of work to be done in that regard. But is that a fair or valid concern on my part that this management group has not been terribly welcoming when other people have been brought in? Like, do you think that's a concern?
It
didn't work well for Trevor Linden, obviously.
Well, but, I mean, he was brought in. Welcoming when other people have been brought in is a confusing one for me. Because it's like, he was the one who, Trevor and Jim were the ones who fired a bunch of people. It's a small tent operation at the moment. And they could use additional bodies. And they, you know, they desperately need them, right? Like, they desperately...
Yes.
I don't think you should have an organization without three AGMs at this point, to be totally honest with you. I think two is very few. Plus, Chris Gear was only promoted, 6 weeks before the pause last season, right? Like, they ran with one AGM for a long time. You know, Gear got promoted.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, look, there's smart people there. There's smart people there. They just need so many more resources, so much more independence from hockey operations. The process is not collaborative enough and never really has been under Jim, typically, right? Like, Jim and John Weisbrod, the other assistant general manager, are known for having a habit of just sort of making decisions together. You know, there's been commentary about, you know, pro scouts not being consulted on the Gudbranson trade and, you know, the sort of laser focused on Yo Levy thing, right? Like, there've been times where people like Linden sort of tried to erect processes and maintain processes and sort of change things up. And yeah, that didn't last, right? We know what happened with Judd Brackett. Yeah. So, I mean, look, it's a fair point. It's a fair point and something that, you know, is going to be something the Twins are going to need to navigate. And it'll probably be difficult to navigate, or could be difficult to navigate, depending on how it all functions. But, you know, at the end of the day, you add good people, even if their advice isn't heeded at every moment, like, that does make you better, even if it's only at the margins.
Yeah, I mean, I just hope that Jim and John don't sort of get even more insular if this is, you know, seen as their last chance. Like, it's sort of a now or never thing, and, you know, they're going to stick to their guns. I would hope that they would step back and say 5 out of 6 years without playoffs, that ain't working. So we need to expand the tent here. We need to listen to some outside voices. And, you know, they may not like the truth, and ownership may not like the truth either, but how can anybody like what's happened here in five of the last 6 years? Like, if you're embarrassed by what outside voices and advisors are going to tell you, how can you not be embarrassed by what's happened to the product on the ice, but also in the community? Like, so I don't get why it's taken this long, I guess. And, you know, that's outside of my control. I know that. But that's the question that I keep coming back to is, you know, why are they scrambling here in this final week of the regular season? First Jeff Courtnell's name and then the Twins. And, you know, we're hearing that, you know, maybe they've talked to the Twins for a little while, but.
Well, they've talked to Arthur Griffiths. Like, here's fundamentally, though, they did explore their options. Like, that's what all of this. They talked to Arthur Griffiths. They talked to Jeff Courtnell. Jeff Courtnell said they've talked to others. We know now that they talked to the Twins. You know, back in February, Roberto Luongo's name was floated by the likes of Satyar Shah and Elliot Friedman. You know, I think at times their confidence has been challenged. Ownership's confidence has been challenged. And they have occasionally explored their options, both directly and indirectly. And fundamentally, I think at the end of the day, they've decided to maintain the status quo. Maybe it's budget related. Maybe it's that, you know, ownership decided that having cut the player personnel spend and been as involved as they were this offseason, that their hockey operations leadership deserved a mulligan. I don't know. There's no good reason for it, though. Like, there's no reason you could give that anyone would be like, ah, now that I know the truth, I understand. Like, no matter what, it would be poor stewardship, to put it tactfully, right? And, yeah, I mean, that's sort of where we get to this impasse. But clearly, in casting a wide net, in having these conversations with various local hockey personages, like, I mean, Benning may have been informed over the last 24 hours that he's coming back, but it's pretty apparent that, you know, not only is the market sort of short on trust for Canucks management, but clearly Canucks ownership is too, you know, to some extent anyway.
I just don't get the sense, Tom, and maybe you've got a different read on the fan base. I don't have a great sense that bringing Daniel and Henrik, as great as they are as all-time Canucks, bringing them in, I think, would be viewed positively. But I don't know that that positivity is going to outweigh the fact that the guy that a lot of people thought should be the fall guy is still going to be the guy at the top of the tower.
Well, what about Twins plus Julian?
Well, right or wrong, there is a massive segment of the fan base that has it in for Jim based on the results and based on the way that they've arrived at the results. Like,
you mean it's not an unfair thing based on just liking to be negative about the team, J-Pat? someone in the industry texted me today jokingly saying, what a wild team process and fan base. To which I respond, the fan base might be the most rational thing around the organization at this point.
No, I honestly, I
meant it though. Like, I wasn't really kidding.
No, you're right. But I still maintain, like, you could bring in the Sedins, the Sedins could recommend that Alex Burrows is the next head coach. You could repatriate Roberto Luongo at some point. I still think that there's a good chunk
Igor,
of fan
get
base.
Igor Larionov.
Bring them all back.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Starting for the Canucks in the front office, the 2010-11 Vancouver Canucks.
Right, but if
with
Jim
some
is still here,
mixed in.
But if Jim's still here, I think that there is a good chunk of the fan base that is always going to question why, and like, it is a bottom line business ultimately, and the bottom line in terms of wins and losses has not reflected well on his time here.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, no question. You know, lots of Calder wins, more Calder trophy nominees than playoff appearances.
Tom, I tweeted this out this morning, and you weren't here at the end of that 2019 season, but you certainly were familiar with all the people and had enough contact in Vancouver,
sure,
and watched the league. But I tweeted out, like, at the end of that 2018-19 season, Quinn Hughes gets injected into the lineup. There was the night he played three home games and then two road games in Nashville and St. Louis to finish up when he got injected into the lineup for the very first time. And there was the night that he had the overtime shift with Besser and Pettersson, and this city was crackling. Like, the possibilities were endless. And I had to double check that that was just 2 years ago. Like, the...
I mean, what about 8 months ago when they were in the second round of the playoffs?
That. I understand the bubble, too. But people weren't... Like, I was at those home games with full buildings when, you know, people got to witness. They already had Pettersson in his rookie season, and now you're adding Quinn Hughes. And, like, the place was jumping. It was alive. People could see the future. And then you're right. The playoff bubble in Edmonton from an arm's length. But we all watched it. You were there. But the rest of us watched it from afar. Like, I'm not telling people the stuff they don't know, but it reinforces like how quickly it has turned for the Canucks. And I guess the hope has to be that if it can turn that quickly, that it can turn back the other way. And Botch sort of, you know, remember that his final army.
Yeah,
or
I don't think he meant this. Well,
it does go the other way. No, he had the line though. It goes the other way. Yeah, you know, and we all want to be there when it goes the other way. But again, smart, shrewd business decisions have to be made. And I just keep coming back to the fact that you can bring in advisors, but ultimately, I am concerned that when this front office has money to spend once again, you know, what's there in the proof of concept, in the track record that tells you the money will be spent wisely?
There is no money to spend this offseason anyway.
Right. So
people keep saying that I've said Beagle's going to be on LTI next season, by the way. I keep seeing this in my mentions. I've never said that. I don't know what's going on there.
There's been so much noise around Jay Beagle and his injury and the Canucks.
Who knows? I don't think there's clarity there, personally.
No, there isn't. And maybe we'll get – I mean, even last week when I asked about Pettersson, Travis said, like, there's a time and a place. And, you know, hopefully it's when the season is over that we do get a little bit of clarity. Like, nobody knows what's going on with Brandon Sutter. Like, he's just disappeared as well. He's not coming back, I don't think. But,
no,
but,
he's not.
But there are these injuries that, you know, Antoine Roussel.
Oh, next season? Next season, I could see Sutter being back.
I could, too, for, you know, $1 million. If you could guarantee me that he never rose above the fourth line center spot. Like, even if there were injuries, the temptation, if he's back, that's the problem. The temptation is that he'll be the guy that slots in higher in the lineup. And if I knew that you could just plant
there's like
him as
$7-8 million to spend, though. There's $7-8 million to spend.
Right.
Earmark one of it for Brandon Sutter. and then, you know, I mean, there's not a ton of damage that can be done this offseason. Then that, you know,
that's part of the 2 years that Jim referenced in that midseason Zoom. So I'm saying when they've got money to spend.
I don't know why I said that. I actually regret saying it immediately. There's not much damage that can. This is a crucial offseason. There are a ton of unique opportunities, ones that the Canucks absolutely have to avail themselves of. Not to mention the leverage of getting Hughes and Pettersson done at the right level. So, I mean, that's going to shape fundamentally your options for, you know, constructing a contender around this group during their prime years. You know, I saw on Sakaris and Price, you referenced a veteran player who's, you know, flying directly home from the Calgary game, right? Not sort of coming back to Vancouver for exits. I think there are potentially some trade requests coming. I think this is an unhappy group. And I think navigating this is going to be really, really tricky for the Canucks. You know, so from that perspective, too, I certainly don't think that the frustration being expressed in the Vancouver market is uncalled for or irrational or, you know, the Vancouver market being crazy again. Like, I actually think the Vancouver fan base and market might have the clearest, a much clearer assessment at this point of this team, certainly than like the national media covering it.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Got your happy price line.
All right. One to go. Were you at all
Are the Canucks poised to be one of the first teams ever to go undefeated after the beginning of the playoffs?
They are. And in fact, I was thinking
NHL history.
The playoffs started on Saturday.
Elite playoff team. The Vancouver Canucks.
Canucks are the first team with the afternoon games. Canucks are the first team to two wins in the playoffs.
Oh, buddy. This time of year. Built for this.
Did you see the ad for the playoff bracket in the corner on the sideboards in the rink?
Yeah, I did. That was good. I like that. Poor players, eh? Like having a puck battle, just being like, oh, man, I forgot to fill mine out. I'm like, oh, I really shouldn't have picked the Blues. That was a bad call.
I hope they didn't pick the Blues. Were you at all, like, I have to admit, like, when I walked out of the building today, realizing it's the last time, I hope it's the last time I'm in Rogers Arena where the media is the only observers. Like, I sat and I kind of, I mean, the game was so secondary that I really didn't pay terribly close attention to it. But I don't know, like, you know, it's been a weird year for me, obviously, with what happened at 1040. And so I was just kind of reflecting on where I was in my professional life at the start of the season to where I am now. And appreciative of the fact that through all this, like, we got to go. Like, you were one of the really lucky ones to experience it last summer in the bubble. You put in the hours. But, you know, other than that pre-bubble training camp, like, I didn't see any hockey until January. And so, you know, even though the hockey and the product on the ice wasn't great, like, there were still moments at Rogers Arena this year when you think of Hoglander, and it was kind of cool to see him score in the home finale. Brock Besser, you know, the season he had. Some Knights of Demko, that first game after COVID where they beat the Leafs. And you know,
oh, like, yeah, that was awesome.
Like, so as sort of as much of a disaster as the season is, when you cover it as closely as we do, like, you still have to step back and realize, like, there were moments. There weren't enough of them, and not from enough players, obviously, but there were still moments. And, like, I feel fortunate that we got to enter the building and watch the Canucks play and watch NHL hockey this year.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, for sure. No question. And yeah, I mean, yeah. It says a lot, though, that when you're like, the moments, and I was like, Toffoli. In my head, I was like, McDavid, Toffoli. Like, those are the moments that most stood out to me. Like, oh, that Toffoli performance, that was scrumptious.
Come on, you saw a Brandon Sutter hat trick.
That was great, man. Not just a hat trick. What a hat trick. Like, those goals. Seen. Unreal.
Never before seen in the NHL.
No, that's true. And but yeah, I mean, no, I've been really grateful to cover every game that I've ever got to cover, and especially since the pandemic began. You know, what I saw 28 games live this season because I didn't miss a Canucks game. So 28 games plus the 60, like, I've, you know, since the pandemic started, I've managed to attend a full NHL season or more worth of hockey. Now, I've seen some games that I won't write home about ever, right? Like, when I think about the fact that I got to witness four of those round robin, remember the goofy round robin that they did in the bubble to determine seeding? Like, I watched every one of those, and I watched these two games that the Canucks played. Like, it was such an exhibition game that the NHL trialed puck tracking tech today.
Right. Yeah.
Like, wow. That's, I mean, this was an exhibition. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, anyway, there have been weird moments. There have been good moments. There's been some great hockey. There's been mostly some meh hockey, at least what's been played on Vancouver ice. But there have been some stellar performances, including from a variety of Canucks players. You know, hopefully in the near future, we'll get to experience games with fans again. And you know, meaningful games, like meaningful hockey games. But, you know, the direction that this franchise is trending in remains troubling. And I don't think the news that's come out of the organization over the course of the past week, like, you know, it's not as if today, if today the Canucks had announced, you know, like, I don't know. But, like, when I think about the treatment of this coaching staff, when I think about the treatment of the scouts who weren't extended until this week, you know, I mean, it's tough. Like, it's really tough for me to sort of put a happy veneer on it. You know, this season's been so miserable. Players got sick. Families got sick. You know, instead of sort of having people debate performance in a comment section, we had to close a comment section because we were discussing sexual misconduct allegations. You know, when I think about this season, I'll mostly remember, I think, just like people who, you know, suffered for health reasons because of mistreatment, in some cases both. You know, I'll think of the black marks, and fundamentally, I think the things we'll remember from this Canucks season, ultimately, at the end of the day, years down the line, are going to be negative. And, you know, not to end this podcast on a dour note, because I am grateful, and I think on an industry-wide perspective, you know, the NHL fundamentally was saved this year, right? Like, this was the season that saved the NHL, and, you know, the expansion fee coming, and the TSN deal, the TNT deal, like they position the league to be relevant, culturally relevant in the United States in a way we haven't seen since the 90s. You know, I think a lot of good work was done on a league level. These playoffs have been unbelievable so far. Every minute I've watched has been riveting. But when I think about the Canucks' place in it, you know, it's like a whoopee cushion or a balloon having the air let out. And, you know, for a long suffering fans of this franchise, I mean, I can't point to a ton of reasons for optimism aside from an elite young core here and, you know, the possibility that through the draft lottery, the Canucks will be able to add to it with a high pick in the coming months. So, you know, there's a lot of work to be done on this franchise, a lot of work to turn it around, and hopefully it starts with the organization taking stock of how its own people have been treated throughout this season. And doing an awful lot better.
Well, through it all, we'll always have Jimmy Vesey's car parked in the parking lot in Ottawa.
Yes.
We have Jimmy Vesey racing from Toronto to Ottawa to take the warm-up. Not getting not into the lineup.
Play. No. Yeah. Oh, my God.
By the way, what's his exit meeting going to sound like? So,
Jimmy, we hate your guts. We hate your guts, man.
Jimmy. So, Jimmy, how do you think your season went here?
Yeah, I mean, he should just book his flight back to Boston. No, I mean, look.
I'm envisioning that now. Jimmy, how do you think your season went? Which one's Daniel and which one's Henrik?
Oh, God.
But honestly, Tom, if the organization, like, I guess you know, you sort of encapsulated the season well. It feels to me, with one game to go, like, management and ownership is still scrambling here. Like, I think if they had done it right, the Canucks could have got some really goodwill if they had announced, or just even if word had got out that Daniel and Henrik were being brought in to sit in on the exit meetings. Like, a sort of forceful statement that they, in fact, had accepted that role at the very least. And I think people would have thought, like, that's forward thinking. That's, you know, there's two guys that get it. And it's to me that on the eve of the season finale now, it's the organization's reaching out to all these different people, but we still don't know in what capacity. And if anybody has truly said, yes, you know, I want to be part of the solution here. So let's see where it goes. One game remains. Again, the game in Calgary is not going to mean anything, but that will fulfill the obligation of 56 played with a three-week hiatus in the middle due to COVID, and then we'll see, you know, where the news cycle takes us and what the end of the week looks like, and if they can, in fact, get in some exit meetings and some final media interviews with the players, and who knows who we're going to hear from, and if Jim's staying on, you would think that we would hear from him at some point here before the week is through. So the future of the coaching staff, obviously, there's still a bunch of things to wade through, and we will continue to monitor this as closely as we have all season long here at the VanCast. Just want to mention a couple of other podcast options for you. At The Athletic, Craig Custance and Sean Gentile have debuted The Athletic Hockey Show. Their first guest was Ryan Miller, so you may want to look for that at The Athletic website or The Athletic app and check that out. Former Canuck goaltender Ryan Miller Aaron Andrews spending the full 60 with Craig Custance on the season finale of the full 60. That's at The Athletic on Thursday. Check out our comment section for every podcast episode that we drop. You'll find that at The Athletic app. Rate and subscribe to The VanCast on Apple. And if you're not already a subscriber, go to theathletic.com/VanCast. Receive a subscription for just $3.99 a month. And with that, there's one to go.
One more podcast episode left in this week?
No. Well, there's that too.
There's that too. Yeah, but one more game.
One more game to go. Artur Silovs.
Delicious.
Shutting
out
the Flames.
Silvos!
Yeah, we'll be back once the season is done. Full recap later on this week. And then we're not going anywhere. I've had a lot of people ask, are you guys shutting it down? Are you shutting it down?
Come on.
We're just getting started.
Yeah, 3 week, all summer. That's what we do.
That is what we do.
You're just like, oh, God.
You and Dolly will have a piece up. If people haven't seen it, just should mention that as well. A lot of what we talked about, but they're in the printed form at The Athletic now. So you can
plus notes on Hughes and Pedersen.
Yes, you're right.
We didn't really get into that. Hughes and Pedersen second contract news.
Hey, if we put the Sedins on the back burner, Pedersen and Hughes can wait too.
If the Twins are our third line news item, that tells you a lot.
All right, well, let's call it a day for now. Again, we felt the need to jump in here and deliver this one, an emergency fan cast, as we said we would do throughout the season when the news called for it. So we felt that the time was right. Here we are. Hope you enjoyed this edition of the VanCast. For Grant, it's J-Pat. Thanks so much for listening to another VanCast here at The Athletic and theathletic.com.